This is the Skies Blue podcast.
Well, hello, welcome back to the next episode of the Sky is Blue podcast, the first of 2021. So, happy new year from me, Phil Tulip, Paul Fisher, Stuart Basson, and Daryl Carpenter. Since we were last with you, of course, we've had only a couple of matches, Solihull and Solihull, and we've had a second COVID-19 thing. But, you know, James Rowe carries on with the revolving door, doesn't he? And we've had more new players coming in. That's obviously led to speculation about whether people will be going out. There's speculation about another one coming through the door sooner rather than later, maybe even before this goes out on air. I'm sure we'll talk about. But there's one thing for certain, Stuart, isn't there? Your pens will ink in quite often for the moment for the future history, because it's a busy old time, isn't it?
It certainly is. I got as far the other day of putting Alex Whittle into the four or five different spreadsheets that I keep for different players and their comings and goings. And then when we all went down with COVID, I thought, well, we won't be signing him for a fortnight. You never know whether it'll go through or not. So I got rid of him. And then, of course, 3 or 4 hours later, I'm putting him all back in again. So it is all go. And I long for the close season when surely we can't still be signing 3 or 4 people a week.
And of course, it was another Gloucester City player, Alex Whittle. Day one, James Rowe signed Nkwasi Asante, and there was the agreement that Bill wouldn't approach for any more contracted
Gloucester. Well, I know.
And since then, George Carline and Alex Whittle have come in. And Daryl, you seem to think that quite a few of these part-time players might have some form of part-time buyout clause or something along those lines. You've got a bit of a theory on that, haven't you?
Yeah. I was talking to someone whose name shall remain nameless recently, who said it's a different ball game at the levels below us, and even to a degree at the level we're now at, which we're wholly unused to after our long history. But if players get offered the opportunity of a full-time playing contract, they can get out of their existing contract, which is something I certainly wasn't aware of. But you can understand the logic of it, don't you?
Although, of course, Chesterfield did say we won't approach anymore. So, you know, they might have had the offer, but not by Chesterfield.
Well, that's also true. Let's hope John Crew's got a good relationship with their top man. I don't think litigation we need it on top of everything else. But I think we're all a bit shocked at the speed at which he's rebuilding the squad. And I think it's quite interesting. They're all on 18-month contracts. So he's not doing anything silly to sort of burden us with players years and years into the future like we've done so often in the past. But he's clearly got a plan in place, and maybe a bit of it. We might speculate on is he trying to build his squad early before before the end of the closed season when Stuart wants it all quiet. He probably have it all quiet by the sounds of it.
Yeah, well, you say he might be doing the Sheridan and not signing anybody in the season. Oh, come. Yeah, before we finish play. And Paul, obviously people are concerned about where the pound notes are coming from, but we have to assume that the manager knows the value of players at this level and that you can perhaps get in 2.5 or 3 players for the cost of one in our old regime, if that's the right way of putting it, Paul. I'm sure these are not top dollar signings in comparison where we've been in recent history.
Indeed, they've looked at the sort of finances that have been paid to the current crop of players, you would assume, and thought, well, there's some, you know, funds that we can sort of work around there, really, if should one or two be able to be sort of put to one side. You know, if clubs come in for them, then we can let them go. In the minute, we're just going to try and get players to come in now so we can build up the squad should the other players do leave. You know, if so, and then we've got cover for them straight away. So they've certainly gone through the finances there and had a look and seen what's available and what they can use, and needed to do that. And I think in changing the squad pretty quickly is going to work in favour for the second half of the season. I mean, should the amount of games coming up as well, we're going to need a bigger squad. You know, not everybody's going to go out, you know, because it's going to be Saturday, Tuesdays, by and large, barring a couple of weeks. There's going to be games two games or three games in 7 days, isn't there? So, you know, it's going to be a tough end to the season. They're going to need some players.
Well, I think there's 30 games to go. That's just in the National League, I think, isn't it, so far? So no question that the squad depth will be severely tested, and the finances of a lot of our rivals will be severely tested as well. That said, the divvy up of the monies from the government is still something that a lot of people are considering, and I think some of the numbers that have been put out about the likes of Boreham Wood, who are probably raking it in significantly more than if people were going through the turnstiles. So something needs doing on that, Stuart, doesn't it, really, to even that up? Although, of course, there's no promise that there's going to be any more money coming in, because I think we've got to the end of the spell, haven't we?
We have, yes. There was supposed to be some lottery money, wasn't there, which was considered to be a loan rather than a grant, which I think the National League are trying to get turned into a grant. But it's not fairly shared out, is it? I imagine the prospect of clubs returning money so it can be fairly shared out is nil. But perhaps what they could do is to sign all these players that we might want to move on who are on high salaries now they can afford it. Teams like Boreham Wood are probably making more money shut down than they are when they were playing, aren't they?
Yeah, they had a good cup run as well, Stuart, didn't they? So they've got, you know, they played Millwall the other day. I know they wouldn't have got the gate receipts and whatnot, but they got to the third round. Well, you know,
prize money will do, won't it?
Know, exactly. Yeah. They got three rounds just to get to the third. So you know, they're making some money.
And so before we start talking about the players that have come in the door and through, who are the players that that are vulnerable from a going forward with Chesterfield position? Of course, the manager saw Alex Kiwomia disappear. Corey Ade, the young goalkeeper, which was sort of fairly inevitable, I think, at that point in time. Mackay, Butterfield, Rawson and Sharman are out on loan at the moment. Regan Hutchinson's been a bit like the invisible man. So are we talking about the likes of Bowden, Buchanan, Rowley, Tyler Denton, Jonathan Smith has been the vulnerable players in an ongoing scenario for Chesterfield, Daz?
Yeah, you would say so. I think the signing of the lad whose name I can't pronounce, Dinanga that came in the other day, which was a bit of a left field one. I think that probably spells the end of his second term at Chesterfield for Scotty. You can't see that we would need, with a hopefully returning fit Tyson, that we would need an extra forward. I wouldn't have thought if Scott was going to stay around. And you would have to think, bearing in mind he was signed under the previous regime, that he's on pretty decent money. Likewise, maybe for Buchanan, Rowley, and one or two others, to be honest. So, using your analogy earlier, I think it's quite reasonable to say one of those out, you might get two or three in for the same money.
Or one out, we've already had the three.
I was trying to go for that earlier. I was just saying, well, there's possible three players could go, and we've already got quite a few in already.
More likely to possibly sign very quickly if we believe the rumours that we're hearing. But in terms of those, Stuart, are there any that you would be sad to see go? And I'm talking about today. I'm not talking about what their history is, what they can add to the team now in comparison with the current makeup of the squad. Are there any of those that you'd feel would be unlucky?
Possibly Buchanan, I think, because he's probably the best left-sided, full-backy type defender at the club. But you know, unless your name is Evans or Tom Denton, you know, and possibly Weston in midfield with the season he's having, I think if you haven't already been signed by James Rowe, then you're going to be looking over your shoulder, really.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I agree with that.
But
yeah.
I don't think there's a particularly long list of the people that he inherited that he would not replace if the opportunity came. Mm. You know,
it may be that the likes of Rawson and Sharman are players that he might retain next season because, you know, that's across the earth. And we all know that there's some promise in
there. Yes.
And whilst they're out on loan at the moment, they are still, well, they're not at the moment training with the team, but when the team's at work, yeah. They're the team. So we'll be able to see them in close quarters. But, you know, Jonathan Smith's been in and out of the side the last 12 months or so.
Yep.
Tyler Denton, despite the manager suggesting that he got a future, hasn't really been involved at all. Reagan Hutchinson, as I alluded to earlier on, hasn't really been involved, despite being an extremely talented player. And I think if you talk to a lot of the current squad, who's the most technically gifted, Reagan Hutchinson would be in their top little pile. But we've not seen him play enough, have we?
Yeah. No.
And Jordan Cropper, people are sort of saying, oh, will that signal the end of Jordan Cropper? Well, that's up to Burnley. That's not up to Chesterfield because he's signed to the end of the season. So unless Burnley call him back, he's going to be at Chesterfield for the rest of the season. It's not a decision that Chesterfield can make by themselves. Burnley can take him back in a mutual way, but Burnley have to say yes. It's not just a question of Chesterfield saying, can we send him back? And from what I believe, he's not costing a fortune as well. And certainly as an attacking outlet, we all know how promising he is. He's still got a lot to learn on defence, but we've had that conversation here before, haven't we? So, there's going to be quite a few players looking over the shoulders, and we reckon to balance the books for the eight that have come in. Well, Kiwamu's gone out, hasn't he? Another two out, certainly three out, would probably mean we're back to where we were in pound notes, I would think. Daz, that's certainly your view, isn't it?
Yeah, that would be my reading of it, Phil. I don't think you need to get rid of 6, 7, 8 to do that. I think, as you say, with what's already out on loan plus the ones that have gone, if you've got 2 or 3 more out, I think they might even be in a positive situation financially, as strange as that may seem to us. I mean, we're dealing with a different market, one that we've never dealt with before. Because we've got a manager who knows the worth of players at this level, and we've not had that before.
No, very much so. And, we all think we know that, of course, Curtis Weston's off being quoted as being the man on the top of the salary tree at the moment. But you don't mind so much when they're contributing, Paul, in a way that he's contributing at the moment. Not only is he contributing on the park, he seems to be the fitness leading guru off the park as well. And I did discover at Solihull the other day that the lad who'd been doing the fitness coaching has left, the American guy who I can never quite remember what his name was. He's moved on. So I think certainly while they've been Zooming during the COVID interruption, Curtis Weston seems to have filled that void with a great deal of enthusiasm, and his performances are as good as they've been any time he's been at Chesterfield football. What about Milan Butterfield? Has he got a future?
I mean, he looks comfortable. I think I don't know whether he looks more a traditional defensive midfielder, though, doesn't he? That sits in front of almost a sweeper-esque type player that just sits in front of the back four or back three and just plays it there. I don't know whether he fits into the high intensity of what James Rowe is after, because he quickly was sent out on loan, wasn't he? So he wasn't like he had plenty of chance to have a look at him, or that we've got an under 23 or reserve side so that he can build up in that way. And I think that's what's hampering some of the squad players that aren't playing with their own, having five subs and whatnot, is the fact that we haven't got a reserve and under 23s. So I think, unfortunately, just because of James Rowe as he is, I think Butterfield's days are numbered, not that he's done anything wrong.
Hmm. Yeah.
Stuart, could you have seen Milan Butterfield scoring the goal that Jack McCourt scored against Barnet, or the goal that Tom Whelan scored against Solihull, where it was all about sprinting like nobody's business for McCourt's goal, and persistence and just not giving up with Whelan's? You know,
on the strength of what we've seen so far, no, I don't think you could have done. But I just don't think we've seen everything that the player, you know, has to offer, really. I'm convinced there's a player in there somewhere.
Yeah, I agree.
But of course, with his geographical background and where he used to play his football, I expect James Rowe would have known quite a bit about him, you know, because they were all from around that sort of that arc around the southwest of Birmingham, weren't they? So, you know, you'd have expected him to have been to games where Butterfield had played for Kidderminster or whoever. And you'd expect him to know more or less what he thinks he's capable of. You know, it's a shame. I suppose a lot of the hope that I had in him was just invested in him because he was one of our players, and, you know, we'd picked him up from a lower divisioned team, if that's the right word. And you want those kind of transfers to work, don't you? So perhaps it's just me wanting it to happen rather than there being any realistic prospect of it happening.
In the same that we all want Joe Rowley to work, don't we?
But
despite getting around that 100 appearance mark, he's not made the spark that's required to just take it to that sort of different level. And talking about 100 appearances as well, you know, Lawrence Maguire's there or thereabouts as well. And somebody suggested on Bob's board about the number of managers that have he's played for. He's been selected for first team duty by 9 different managers. That's
wow.
7 permanent and 2 caretakers, which from what I've been looking at is the record. You know, Dave Blakey, who spent 20 years as a player, played 5 managers.
Yeah. I suppose with Lawrence, if you chuck in the one he had at Fylde on loan and a couple of England C managers as well.
And of course, he was a Chesterfield player when Paul Cook and Dean Saunders were here, but they didn't select him for the first team.
No. And it's funny that Cook gave him his contract, didn't he, as well?
Yes.
Just before Cook left.
Yeah.
So, he's played under all these managers, but hasn't officially played under them. He's just been there a hell of a long time. Saying his Rowley's played under 6, if you look at it as well. You know, although I don't think he's featured under James Rowe yet, so I don't know where.
First game, he did. Yeah. Which was a surprise. And he did really 45 minutes. And then the style of game, he'd just not got the miles in the tank for much more than another 10 minutes in the second half, I think, if you remember, because it is that intensity. Well, let's talk about the new players that have come in since the last time we spoke. We're talking about Jack Clark, Marcus Dinanga and Alex Whittle. The first two, Clark on loan from Villa, Dinanga on loan from Stevenage. Alex Whittle, one of the contracted players at Gloucester that suddenly wasn't a contract player at Gloucester and is now a Chesterfield player. We've obviously had very little opportunity to see them play, only Dinanga as a sub at Solihull in the second encounter against Solihull, coming on at a point that Solihull were really pushing pushing forward and putting James Rowe under pressure for a reasonable period of time for the first time. Let's talk about Clark. We've not had the opportunity, but in his 20s, he's not a kid. On loan from Villa, he was a schoolboy England international and described Paul as a very technical player. So, you know, he doesn't look to have the sort of frame of a Western from a strength perspective, but clearly he's going to have some miles in his legs if Rowe wants to bring him in.
Yeah, exactly. He's played a lot for the under-23s, under-18s at Villa. He's only played, started 2 and came on a sub this season for Yeovil. And he's been out of the picture pretty much since he came in. So obviously a bit of a falling out there. But obviously things are happening at Yeovil, aren't they? Sort of behind the scenes. And when you're losing games left, right and centre, although they've been on a pretty decent run the last couple of games, then it tends to be the younger players that get the sort of you're dropped out of it type of thing if you don't match up to us on loan. It's sometimes it's they're just a victim of circumstance, aren't they, rather than actually being not that good a player. But obviously James Rowe's done his due diligence on him, realised that he's likely to be very, very, very cheap as a player coming in, i.e. Villa just taking up his wages for us, probably. And he obviously sees something in him, and he's worth maybe a gamble, if that's the sort. So, and he's only 21, isn't he? So he's got plenty of time to go with that. So I think it's a no loss, I think, in that one, in that respect.
Yeah, and if he'd have hung on for a week, if he'd have known COVID was coming, he might have been playing.
Yeah. Could have been, yeah.
83 or something that seemed to be popping up. Stuart, Marcus Dinanga, a player who is well known in these parts, played for Michelover Sports, played for Matlock, scored a lot of goals for Matlock under Craig Hopkins and Glenn Kirkwood in their joint managership. Scored 30 odd or 40, I think under 40 goals or something in for Matlock Town. And when I was at Solihull, having heard he'd signed, I gave Glenn Kirkwood, who's a big Chesterfield supporter, back at Michelover Sports again, gave him a ring, and he said he was a young lad, he was like lightning, playing off the main striker. So, although he came on for Tom Denton, I think playing alongside a Denton role. So to me, he looks as though he's the natural sub for Asante in the latter stages of a game, because we know how hard he works. But, a good signing. He's been played on the wing, I believe, at Stevenage for quite a few of his appearances, whereas he feels he's a number nine.
Yeah. I think your assessment of him as being more of a replacement for Asante in matches rather than Tom Denton is perfectly accurate. I think it was in that sort of playing off of somebody role that he scored all those goals for Matlock, wasn't it? And I think quite a few of us probably hoped at the time that he would go back to Burton and his next loan move would be to a club a bit further up the pyramid like us, it just took a few years, I suppose, but we've got him eventually. He's had a bit of a lull, I think, hasn't he, since all those goals were scored for Matlock. Has he ever actually played a league game for Burton? The time he was there, because he kept on getting contracts off them. But he's
hang on, let me just have a look. No, actually,
I don't think he's played in the league for Burton, but he has played in the league for Stevenage, of course.
He has found goals harder to come by in more recent times, which I suspect is more to do with the role that he's asked to play rather than a higher standard of football that he happens to be playing in, But
Stuart.
Sorry?
He has played against Chesterfield, and I'm not talking about for Matlock or anybody like that. He came a last-minute substitute for Hartlepool when he was on loan at Hartlepool against us.
Right. Well, we won't try and make any judgment on the strength of sort of a last-minute appearance against us, will we? But
he didn't have a good time at Hartlepool, did he, after making that move from
It was their first season down, wasn't it? And he came in the summer, and I think he was sort of touted as being part of the sumptuously rebuilt Hartlepool team that was going to storm everything before it and get promotion at the first attempt. And we know how that works, don't we?
We've heard that before.
Two starts, 13 sub appearances, and
But put him in the right place, get him playing off the right people, put your arm around him a bit when he needs it, and someone who can score those goals can score a lot of goals at a better level. I'm sure.
We'll give him a partner who's confident. It breeds confidence, doesn't it? It rubs off on other people, doesn't it, really? If you've got three strikers in Tom Denton, Asante and Dinanga for the rest of the season, that's not a bad trio, is it? You think about it. So if things go right for Dinanga, that is.
Absolutely right. And I think one thing that may well have gone off the manager's menu is pushing
Mandeville further forward, because you know he looked a little bit when he was pushed further forward against Brackley, wasn't it, in the cup? Did look, and that was against a team a division lower. We know a team that loves the FA Trophy, but you know he's a good number 10. But when you just rely on him as a striker, it's not quite worked on the occasions that he's done that. And it's not just that one game. There's been a few occasions, particularly when Chesterfield have been chasing. And hopefully Tyson will be fit, you know, before too much longer, which gives another opportunity up front as well, and another different dynamic. Because I absolutely, despite his age, I absolutely feel that he's a perfect James Rowe player.
He's
got that work ethic, hasn't he?
Yeah, and he can get backwards and forwards across the defence quickly to close defenders down, can't he? You know.
So you've drawn the short straw, Daz, because Alex Whittle. What do you know about?
Well, I think somebody put a very clever picture. Was it on Twitter or Instagram showing somebody whittling, which was. I know nothing about it, but what I thought was interesting is he's another left-sided defender.
Yeah.
Now, bearing in mind we've already signed Taylor, he's now signed Whittle for that side. I think Tyler Denton can wave bye-bye by the sounds of it. You don't need three of them. And as we were saying earlier, I think Buchanan can also wave bye-bye because you don't need four of them.
Well, Buchanan, you'd absolutely, definitely want if you felt that the manager was going to play 4-4-2.
Yeah.
But if his, it's a little bit like Paul Cook, isn't it? His plan A was 4-2-3-1. His plan B was 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
And occasionally 4-4-2, he'd play Richardson Doyle up front, but it never quite seemed to work as well. But
my only argument against Buchanan is his legs.
Yeah.
And I think, whatever shape Rowe playing, he will want somebody more mobile than Buchanan.
Yes, it's a pity because David Buchanan is one of the few players that we've had since we've been in the National League that you struggle to find anything that he's done wrong. I think he's been wronged by being played in central midfield and left wing backs and everything along those lines. And his 10 minutes as a left back, he looked as good a left back as we've had for a long time.
Yeah.
So I think he's just one of those players that have got the type of manager that he just doesn't quite fit his play.
It's wrong place, wrong time job for him. And if you look at all the signings so far, they're all athletic. Even our friend who we saw 20 minutes of the other night, Dinanga, what amazed me about him was I expected him to be fairly quick and lively. He looked very good in the air for a man of his size as well.
Yes.
So he seems to me to be building a team of athletes.
And he's another one of the 20-somethings that aren't quite 30, but certainly aren't 21. I know we've just talked about Jack Clark. Dinanga's 23, I think, isn't he, off the top of my head?
Yeah. Yeah, he is,
but the likes of Asante, Whelan, McCourt, Taylor, Carline, they've all been around for a while. And Whittle's the same. He played a lot of games in Scotland for Dunfermline. 2012 to 2015. He's played for the likes of Fylde, Southport, York, Forest Green, Boston United and Gloucester. So he's been around this scene for a long time. And clearly he'll be known. I know he only came in the summer for Gloucester City. But it'll be well known. But yes, I think that it certainly spells the end of certainly Tyler Denton and probably David Buchanan as well. And I would think from a financial point of view out of that, Buchanan will be the one that the board will be more anxious to move on. But as I say, with David Buchanan, I just think that's really unlucky because I think he's barely put a foot wrong. He's been asked to do things that, you know, we were all asking under Sheridan, why on earth, when he's done his job that he's done for many years in the Football League, he's looked a player.
Yeah, I mean, we can look back to his time between January and March as helping stay in this league, can't we? Because that's what he did. when he came back into the side, sort of around December, January time, he helped the club stay in the league between that.
Well, Pemberton came in for the second time on the back of experience again, didn't he? And
turned
to the more experienced players. And yeah, certainly Buchanan. I will, you know, we're making assumptions if he'll move on. He might not, of course. But if he does, I'll remember him fondly as a player who gave everything that he could in very, very difficult circumstances for him as a you know, professional left back.
Yeah.
I think it's striking what you said, Phil. There's no 30-somethings coming over the threshold. And I wouldn't expect to see any either.
And also, well, it's interesting because while there are no kind of people who are just having one more meal ticket before they jack it in, the signings, apart from the lad from Villa, don't fit the kind of young and hungry sort of description that all the fans want. What we are signing is players who are, by and large, at their physical sort of peak as footballers, aren't we? You know,
They're hungry from a
yes.
They want their last chance to make it as a full-time.
Yes, you want to get back into full-time professionalism. Yes,
from hunger. As opposed to Paul Cook was generally, not always, because people like Dan Gardner came from Halifax, but generally signing players who just not quite cut it at their Premier League club or were on the way up. Whereas these guys are at the peak of their physical fitness, which is important to the way that James Rowe wants to play the game.
Yes.
Yeah, because it is physical. Not physical in terms of crazy gang, but physically,
the intensity of it.
Intensity, the likes of which we've not seen. You know, it's almost the Leeds United of non-league football, isn't it? The intensity that they do. I bet our guys will be like Leeds in the highest metre covered per match in most areas. I'm not quite sure if that data is available as much at our level as it is in the Premier League, but I bet we're not far off. And there are rumours, you know, as we record this, rumours that a guy called Marty Smith might be next in, who's fits the bill that we've just been describing. 25, youngster at Sunderland, couple of loan spells with clubs up in that neck of the woods. Gateshead and Carlisle, another Kilmarnock player. I do think it's in Kilmarnock's terms and conditions. If you play for us at some stage, you've got to play for Chesterfield. played a little bit in Ireland. Was at Swindon at the same time as Jack McCourt, Salford last season or a couple of seasons ago, and being at Chorley. So you know, he's a midfielder, I believe. Paul, is he? Yeah,
that's right. He's I was just looking at his where he is now. Former Sunderland Academy graduate. Yeah, and as you mentioned, had those loan spells as well. And Salford midfielder. And looked like he played a few games with Jack McCourt in the middle of the park. So looking like that they're going to rotate between Weston, McCourt and Smith with a possibility there is that three.
Well, he played in both games for Chorley against us last season, I've just checked, including when they beat us 3-2. I think we were the first. Were the first team they beat last season?
Yeah.
He played. I'll just check if he played all 90 minutes of that. Yeah, he did. He played all 90 minutes of that match. So he's obviously experienced this level. We don't know if he's got a signing. We're only going on speculation that he's been around today.
And because he knows the level, doesn't he?
Yes, he knows the level. Another one who knows the level. And we've always said, right from coming down into this level, that knowing the division is the most important thing of all in the National League. I think it's more important than just about any other division.
Yeah.
Because that level of intensity, that level of competitiveness, and, you know, there's some flipping good footballers out there as well. You know, that you don't realise how good some of them are. The pitches are good. You know, there's precious little excuse for pitches. I know I was sort of saying about Solihull that it favours them at home. I don't think it's any coincidence that their record at home this season is played 9-1-8. Really narrow pitch, and they know how to
use that to their advantage. Away from home, it's 2-0-5 or something like that. So, you know, they're a decent side, but they're a home side.
Are they, just going on to that, Phil, did you see whether Birmingham City are still playing there, their reserves or
not
23s?
Sure. Question, not sure. Didn't see any obvious signs, but I wasn't looking for them.
Because it just relayed, hadn't it?
Yeah. I suspect they might be, purely because when we had to go round, we had to park on the opposite side of the press box next to the Peaky Blinders lounge. So I think that probably are doing something.
I think that's it, yeah. I think that's it. Because the pitch had been relayed, hadn't it, or something, according to the commentator or something.
So. Yeah, the pitch was new from last year. And the pitch was fine. It was just very, very narrow. You looked at, the first thing you look in was the touchline on the side of the main stand. I didn't really look at the other side, but I assume it's the same. On the main stand side, it was yards and yards and yards in. And you probably saw it better on the the broadcast than I did. And
surface looked great. Surface looked really good.
And it's about 11 or 12 feet narrower than Chesterfield. And, you know, they played quite a different way to they had done it at the Technique a few days earlier. Let's talk about those two games. That 1-0 victory over Solihull, much deserved. Real battle. But a little bit like the Sutton away, Daz, against a star battling side like Solihull, we showed we've got what it takes, and we got the edge with the goal from Whelan.
Yeah, I mean, we dug in, didn't we, first 10 or 15, because we had to. We then started finding our feet, which was quite difficult in the conditions, but you know what I mean. And really, we had a very good spell of about 20 minutes leading up to the goal where I thought, it's coming. And we created quite a few decent chances. Eventually got our noses in front. And even second half when they were huffing and puffing, and even when we went down to 10 men, I never really felt on the edge of my seat wondering if we were going to hang on to the points. I don't know what everybody else thought, but I always felt fairly comfortable. We got the thing in hand.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely agree with that. You know, they had a close call right at the end, but, you know, Leatheren had couple of saves to make, and that was it against another peg in the ground team, and you know, that battling last 10 minutes after Carline had gone off, Paul, you know, you just had to roll your sleeves up a little bit more, didn't you?
Yeah, I think you're right there as well. I mean, and it was good to see as well that they did that. It just shows a bit of grit and determination about it. I didn't agree with their manager saying that. I think he claimed that they had the two best chances or something along those particular lines. I didn't particularly agree.
What, in the first half?
Yeah, I didn't particularly agree with him then. So, because at one stage it was an absolute free for all in their goal mouth before Chesterfield scored, and it would have been like that for 20 minutes as well. You know, so there'd been chance after chance. And these weren't chances. These were shots over the bar. There were shots wide, not necessarily on target, but there was relentless pressure. And I think the manager must have been sort of caught by the snow that had been coming down. He wouldn't have seen that at that particular point. But he's I think when Carling went off, he saw a different side of Chesterfield. Granted, they showed that side again against Salford a few days later, towards the back end as well. But that was under a different type of pressure. But I was pleased that they saw that one through. As more as I was disappointed with us conceding twice on the following Tuesday, but we'll get onto that in a second.
Yeah, and of course the manager was disappointed that the match had been hoisted upon Chesterfield. I know it was the same for both teams, but the Chesterfield players had been not training for 10 days. I know Solihull hadn't played from the same time. Their previous match was in the FA Trophy St. Stars. But they'd been training. They'd been enabled to carry on training. They weren't suffering with a COVID issue. And that's what I think he was concerned about. Not playing two games in 4 days, because that happens all the time. If you're playing two games in 4 days when there's other blank Tuesdays after we've been off for 10 days and Solihull haven't. being on for 10 days. It's almost like your first pre-season game, isn't it? You want to play your Gresley Rovers of this world, be your first one, not one of the most intense teams in the division with the best home record. Yeah. That's not where you want to be at. And whilst, you know, the manager has sort of said he's not prepared to say where the pressure was coming from, I think he did say it all when he said it didn't come from the National League to get the game on.
Yeah.
And, you know, that game, again, you know, Liam Norcliffe shares statistics that the group, the Derbyshire Times, are in, which has just been sold, haven't they? The Derbyshire Times, the group.
Yeah.
Been sold a week or two ago. That group have got a subscription to one of the stat sides. And even in the 2-1 defeat, the expected goals, I think it was 1.7 for Chesterfield, 1.2 for Solihull. So, you know, even the people were saying, "Oh, we didn't play well, bumping it too much." Well, Chesterfield had most shots on targets, and some really good. A little bit like we just described in the match at the Technique, there were scrambles galore, weren't there? And yeah. Great opportunities. Yeah, Whelan put one over from a good position. He forced a good save, and then of course the Asante.
What a goal that would have been.
Yeah.
At that point. Now, you can't really count that as a half chance, can you? Because it was a no chance.
Yeah. But
it was an absolutely phenomenal goal. Perhaps the best individual goal I would have ever seen for Chesterfield had it gone in. So, you know, we were desperately unlucky. And then right at the end, you know, a crossing from the right-hand side. Hollis had been pulled out to defend because it was a raid from our attack. And the big 6'9" lad headed home. And as I put in a thing I did on the club website, Stuart, I don't think we'll have ever conceded goals from people 1'3" difference in height.
No, I'm sure we haven't.
5'6" and huddling at 6'9". And you could see how delighted they were with the win. And I was sitting 5 or 6 yards behind James Rowe and George Foster, and I could see how disappointed they were, and it was very, very, very disappointed. And
I couldn't see us losing the game, Phil. Couldn't see us losing the game. I have to say, looking back on it, and I haven't watched it again since because it's traumatic, obviously. But I felt in complete. Just completely calm again that we got the thing under control.
Yes.
And I do have to say, Leatherham worries me to death. Mm-hmm. Because we've been saying how he's had all these clean sheets and he'd gone down to having 2 shots a game to save. Mm-hmm. And really, on Tuesday night, he had 2 headers to save. The first one, to me, is poor because he's pushed it back into the 6-yard
area. Yeah, agree with that, yeah.
As opposed to away from the goal. And how he's let the second one in, because the ball's no pace on it at all.
No, not at all.
There were 2 shockers to concede. And if you were any of the other 10 or 12 or however many players we had out there, you'd be asking for an apology, I think, for those two.
Yeah, which he did.
It cost us the game.
He did. But, yeah, you know, the angle that I was sitting at was quite low down in the stand looking... looking across when the header went down, I thought, oh, that's no issue. That's a forward save and grasp. And then all of a sudden, I initially thought it must have squeezed under his body because hooded and moved across and was directly in line between me and the keeper by the time it went in. But of course, on the replay, you know, it bounced up and was almost palmed in by Leather. And yeah, like you say, with Sabara's good save, but. The ball was put back into the centre, and you want to see those pushed away, don't you?
If you possibly can.
But again, you know, look at the stats: 1.7 versus 1.2 in our favour on the statistical expected goals. And yes, we didn't quite do enough for our second, and they only did just enough to score more than one, but they got 2.
Hmm.
You look at that.
We had 2
situation.
Yeah, I mean the Western. Putting aside the Asante chance, which, as you say, wasn't really a chance, just brilliant individual effort. But the Western one where the keeper made the block, I really expected him to finish that, especially as well as he's been playing. But then when he put the rebound across, it goes through Dinanga's legs.
Yeah.
6 yards out. It could have hit anybody because there were enough bodies back there. It goes out for a corner and they scramble it off the line twice in the in-swing thing.
Yeah.
Aside all the chances we had first half with Whelan and Asante and one or two others, I mean, it was a game we should never have lost. It really was.
No, I absolutely accept that as where we need to be. You know, no question about that.
Say though, Phil, didn't he? He did say, and he's obviously a sensible kind of kid, bro. He did say some weeks ago, I'll find out more from us losing than winning, and we will have periods of adversity. Well, they've got one now, and it's how we respond. Particularly on the back of another COVID shutdown.
Yes, and he did say post Solihull. I can't actually remember if it was part of the recorded interview or if it was when we were just generally chatting after the microphones had been shut down. I think it was in the interview that, you know, he's been waiting for something to work on. clearly, you know, conceding in the last minute is an Achilles heel for the. For the certainly a group of players that he inherited, because you know, we whilst Stockport wasn't quite last minute, Torquay certainly was. Wealdstone was pretty close, wasn't it? And there might be another one. Oh, Notts County, of course. Yes, yeah. We all try to erase that from our mind. So it clearly is an issue, which is absolutely mental at the moment. From those players that he inherited, isn't it? You know, because we have dealt with it. But as again, I saw a post on social media. We've now had the manager who, congratulations on winning the National League Manager of the Month award or whatever it's called. I saw today. That's the one and only that we've conceded under him. We'd conceded several in a similar amount of games.
Yeah.
So it's moving in the right direction. On an overall generic manner, isn't it? So and yeah, you know, the performance at Solihull was really, really, really good. And we've all said hundreds of times over our Chesterfield supporting career, well, if we carry on playing like that, we've not got a problem. And whilst it wasn't always pretty, it was against a team that don't let you play pretty.
Oh no, They make you look ugly. They can make Barcelona look ugly, I think, Solihull. But I just felt we were in control. We had a game plan. The number of times they tried to come through within certain areas and had to go back, the shape was spot on again. The work rate was there. I think, as he said, you know, when he had to replace Whelan and so forth early, the legs had gone, and that was as a direct consequence, maybe, of the COVID lockdown. But I still felt confident that we'd end up with, well, to be honest, I still couldn't see us not getting the 3 points, even after they'd equalised. I thought, because we responded really well.
Yeah.
I think one of the other things he spoke that Whelan and Denton had to be substituted. But I also think that Denton was probably earlier because the following match at Bromley on a plastic pitch, which of course got postponed, may well have been a game that he wasn't going to play Denton in or not start.
Yeah.
So he might have just wanted to see Dinanga for a little bit of a longer time as well.
Sure.
So that might have been in his mind at that point. And at that point, I think we were winning 1-0 anyway, weren't we? I think we were 1-0 up at that point.
Yeah. 1-0 up with both subs, yeah.
Both subs, yeah, because they were just before the hour, and the equaliser was 61, wasn't it? I think, if I remember. So, but yeah, we've had time with the new manager now. We've had time to get used to, well, five of his new players, if not all of them, really. We see how he works, Paul. How much do you like what you've seen?
I like it a lot. You take one in seven, won't you? One defeat in seven throughout the rest of the season. I'm sure that's not bad going. I like the way that he spoke after the defeat. He wasn't happy about it, and it showed, didn't he? And you know, there's things that work on without getting too sort of angry about it. or making any sort of sarcastic comments about it or anything. He showed that he was really disappointed in the fact that they gave away those two goals. And, you know, despite playing well as well, which is something they'll be frustrated about, because despite playing well, you come away with 0 points. And, yeah, you know, you don't want that to happen on a regular basis. So I like the cut of his jib for the past month, and I like the way the players are playing. They seem to fit into how he wants to play. And the players that he's signing appear to have that winning mentality as well. You know, and sometimes it's also keeping the experienced players as well on their feet. He's brought Hollis back in, who's playing wonderfully well. Evans as well had a lack of confidence start of the season. It's helped him increase his confidence because he knows he's got an assistant manager that he's used to, so it's made him play a little bit better. Also, Curtis Weston sort of raised his game a little bit. Look, you're in the back end now of your 3-year deal that you got and a good contract from Martin Allen that the club's respected and paid for you. You know, they've paid up the time. Increased his performances. Yeah, it has, the last 18 months or so. And also, he's now a leader in the group, isn't he? If he's doing all these and showing about strength and conditioning himself on a sort of minor level, you know, he's got a bit of, sort of leadership qualities about him as well. So that's good to see. So things are going well. Okay, it was a knockback on last Tuesday, and these COVID breaks are a knockback as well. But I think the group are in a good mental state than they were in October, back in the November, at the start of November, when they were really fragile, I think.
Yeah. Stuart, your view?
Yeah, pretty much the same as Paul, really. The sort of view of watching the team between what they were before James Rowe's arrival and what they've been since is incomparable, if you see what I mean. It, you know, one can't really be compared with the other because they're so different. And we are a much more robust team now, you know, sort of in our minds, in our attitudes, and in our concentration, which is the areas in which we were being thrashed every week. You know, sometimes only by the odd goal, but thrashed nevertheless, beforehand, you know. He has given a chance, I think, you know, a chance to the players who were here when he came, you know, and certain players such as Weston have responded, and those that haven't been able to produce the desired response are obviously going to be keeping that revolving door turning as the rest of the season unfolds. But you know, the impact that he's made is incomparable, really, to anyone that we've had before. You know, even Cookie started took a game or two to get going, didn't he? And this chap's come in and the best start to a managerial career since Frank Barlow was given Coxie's old job, isn't it? You know, which is, how many years ago is that now? 40?
Yeah.
You know, 40 years and probably 45 managers, the way we've gone through.
Are you going to be controversial, Daz, and say something completely different?
Oh, no, he's a load of rubbish. No, he's been an absolute breath of fresh air. I know this is a bit of a cliche, but to me, we've got an identity. We know now what the team is trying to do as a supporter base. You can see he's demanding on good organisation, good shape, a very high work rate, this intensity, this high press. We just seem like, you know, this is the way Chesterfield play. And I have to say, under the last, probably since Cookie, to be honest, I can't honestly say we've had an identity. I'd not known from one game to the next what we were trying to do most of the time, but I know now what we're trying to do. And that has to go to the players as well, surely. You know, they must understand.
If we can understand what he's trying to do, that means he's got the message over pretty well to the players. Yeah. You know, because I think we'd all agree that it was difficult to, the words that you use there, Daz, you know, find an identity over the last 5 years has been very, very difficult to do, and he's bringing in a different sort of hungry player,
you know, ideal aged and hungry. It's a new little phrase on us. And, you know, the likes of McCourt trying to get back in there, Whelan in particular, who was just, for me, an absolute superstar. I can't remember the last time I've seen a striker with a work rate of Asante. You know, there certainly hasn't been one anywhere close since Owen Doyle. Doyle's work rate as a single, as a strike, you know, one-man striker, was incredible. But and you know, Asante's sort of control and first touch when he's crowded out on the wing from a diagonal kick from Leatherin or something, a diagonal goal kick. You know, he's just got the silky skills to get round. And you just wonder why he's, you know, he's not been playing at a higher level earlier in his career. Same with Tom Whelan. You think, well, what's he been doing? Who's not been watching him? Or, more importantly, who's not been looking after him properly from his individual perspective? You might, you know, the people playing might be successful, but, you know, sometimes, you know, an individual, when they move to a different club or a different manager, has to stand on their own two feet, don't they? And all of a sudden, Whelan's got two flipping mighty feet that he's standing on that surely, if he'd shown that before,
So, Whelan and Carline could be two phenomenal signs. I think I tweeted or mentioned this the other day. They could be the Robinson and Lorma of 94-95. You know, it was really that. I think they, despite the fact Carline got sent off the other day, his versatility is surprising. How easy he settles into wherever he plays, it's remarkable.
Yeah, if he could just get 10% up on his crossing ability, he'll be some addition, won't he? Because defensively, he's sound, as you say, as utility, a proper utility player, and does slot into whatever position. Probably the biggest utility, best utility player since Drew, I would think. You know, where
play right. Lee Rogers before that. So
definitely got that versatility that you need. You don't need quite so many when you've got 132 players like we've got at the back.
I don't think he'll be required to play at left back for a while, really. So
there's going to be a major injury issue or suspension issue. But you know, the question that we're 10 points as we stand at the moment off the relegation zone, and 4 points off the playoff zone. Can that top seven be made this season, Paul?
Well, I don't see why not, because you know, nobody's sort of running away with it apart from at the top in that one automatic spot with Torquay, and you know, they've slightly been pegged back the other day with the defeat to Yeovil. But if it's scandalous that Chesswood haven't reached the top seven in the last two seasons, you know, if anything, because you know, there's obviously more places to aim for, really, I think. But you know, with the budget that they've had, with the sort of supposedly lesser budget that they've got this season, it should be guaranteed, really. It started poorly, but now picking up results. Seven is by far minimum way of it is. Should be minimum.
And, you know, Daryl, you see guys at the club on a more regular basis than many. They've certainly not given up on it. They might not be saying it publicly, but they've not given up on the season, have they, for sure?
Oh, absolutely not. I think actually they see it as a golden opportunity to cash in a very peculiar year. And if we get a fair wind, the second COVID setback's obviously a real kick in the teeth, but we just got to ride it like everybody else is going to have to do. When the season will actually finish, I'm not sure. I know we've got two or three free midweeks at the minute, but we've got to be using them up fast. Another team. I mean, Dover have played 10 games. So how they're going to go on, I have no idea. but, you know, if you can keep playing to a degree and get a run going. I mean, Hartlepool are on one now. I think they've won five.
Yeah, they're second, haven't they? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's definitely on to do. I'm almost getting to your stage on the last pod. I'd be amazed if we don't make the playoffs. I'd be absolutely amazed if we don't. And I think if we do, we'll be a very dangerous animal in the playoffs.
Yes.
Because we'll be coming in on a right run of form, bearing in mind the position we were in. What, we got 6 points when he came in?
Yeah, yeah, two wins. Yeah, we'd just beaten Woking.
I mean, it'd be a hell of an achievement, but I do think it's doable. As I say, I think the people at the club believe it's doable. James Rowe certainly thinks it's doable. And if he gets the players in that mindset too, then I don't see why not. I really don't. I just wish we could avoid another COVID shutdown.
Yes.
Just while we're on that point, does anyone know why it seems that other levels of football, if somebody comes down with COVID, you isolate them and whoever was with them and the rest of you play on, but at our level, the whole club shuts down for a fortnight?
I think it's something to do with test. They're tested twice a week now. I imagine the National League is nothing like that at all. So they can isolate players rather than whole squads because they don't know that who could have and who couldn't. So
I think field are doing quite a lot of testing, I believe.
Yeah.
And doing the results themselves. You've got those that you do quite quickly. So what they're probably doing is spotting it early.
Early, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would like to think. So hopefully that means that people don't go down with it, if you know what I mean. And so, we're all new at this. Now, Stuart, we've talked many a time about great escapes, but you know, have we had any great creep ups? Whatever the opposite of escape is. Antonyms. I don't know what the antonym of escape is.
31
captured.
Yeah, 31-2. I think we were kind of fifth or sixth throughout most of the season, and then I think we won 7 out of our last 8 or something like that, including thrashing Gateshead 8-1 on the last day of the season.
I don't like that, but that's 30-31.
30-31, is it? Yeah.
We won our last 6 games. To get, and that was only one up that season, wasn't it? We won 5 nil. Nelson, 4-1 home to Rochdale, 3-1 at home to Wigan Borough, 3-1 away at Hartlepool, 3-2 at Lincoln, and then the clincher, as you quite rightly said, 8-1 against Gateshead on, the season finished in April. What's that?
Those were the days.
Oh, yeah.
Ours won't be halfway through in April, will it? Right, we're going on, but...
Stuart, though, we'd had a pretty good season up until that. Yeah, but there's only one team goes up, wasn't there?
So that, you know.
But yeah, we'd had a lot more W's in the column than L's.
But
we needed to. I think it was Lincoln the team that we were battling with. I think it was Lincoln, wasn't it?
Lincoln would have been up there. I think possibly Tranmere, New Brighton, Stockport as well. We're all there or thereabouts.
So that's probably the in its. That was the one.
Did we not have a good run the year we got into the playoffs?
Well, of course, 94-5, of course.
Yeah, and then lost to Cambridge. Did we not have a late surge that year?
89-90. Well, we had a poor run towards the end of the season. We won we had to win on the last day to finish 7th against Grimsby.
Right.
Yeah, we were coasting it. We were 4th. Up until March, and then Adie Shaw got injured.
That's right.
Yes.
And then we fell apart. We didn't win another game until the last game of the season or something. We kept picking up draws, I think, and getting points that way. And then we had to beat Grimsby, and John Ryan came to the fore with that.
Yeah, great memory, Paul. Yes, we beat 1-2-0 at Southend on the 7th of April.
What a game that was.
The sequence was drawn, lost, drawn, lost, drawn, lost, drawn, and then beat Grimsby on the last day of the season.
That was a mad afternoon, that were against Grimsby, incredible, that game.
Only went ahead when my work lent the club some PA equipment for use in an emergency that was propped on top of the police box, these big old loudspeakers that we used to have, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But they decided at the last minute that the club's PA equipment, you know, the tannoy stuff, wasn't up to scratch in case there was any kind of emergency. And they were saying, a game can't go ahead, you know, and so they contacted us and we carted this gear down there.
Which would have been interesting with three and a half.
Sixth match of the season before you go and test the equipment.
Well, yeah, that's what it was like, though, wasn't it? It was all a bit bonkers in those days, you know, with people still kind of reacting to the Bradford fire and all that sort of thing, even after that, you know. Yeah, that was a mad afternoon, wasn't it? But that Southend game sticks into mind. I still got this image of, I think it must have been Andy Morris, Nobby Rogers, and possibly Aidy Shaw just playing little triangles down by Southend's corner flag. We were all stuck on that side, weren't we, watching it? And the fans were just singing, you know, take the Mickey, as they did, but they didn't sing Mickey. You know. All the way through that second half, it was just it was the most comprehensive 2-0 victory I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, there's been some bizarre.
And then we went up to Donny, and Aidy Shaw got kicked off the park, and that was it. Yeah.
There's been some absolutely bizarre.
But you know, to answer the questions, 94-5, obviously with Lorimer and Phil Robinson, was the one where we weren't particularly well shaping for it, and then we put a run together. You know,
21.
But I can see us doing it. Yeah. The longer teams go without games, you know, and the more they get desperate for money and stuff like that, there are teams who are going to have to be cutting their squads without being able to bring players in, you know, just to stay alive. And this is, as I think Daryl said earlier, it is a peculiar season where it should be, you know, if you can sort your resources out, it should be a golden chance to go for it, you know.
The danger is, you know, there's potentially 20 other clubs thinking exactly the same sort of thing, isn't there?
Well, they are, but have they all got the resources that we've got? You know,
although our resources are coming from the. We need to get rid of players who are on wages that aren't commensurate with our position. Yeah. We're still hoping that happens.
Yes.
But it's not like because eight have come in, we've not got to get rid of eight.
No.
To balance the books, it's
think the COVID will put paid to our trophy chances then, because we'll just get kicked out, won't we, for missing the fixture?
Well, I don't think so, Daryl. Yeah, I think that they try to get the games as played as much as possible, which you can revert to the following Tuesday. I think if it's not played by the following Tuesday, then we'll have to give it up because there's no free Saturdays for it.
Right.
So I think you got one chance and week on Tuesday. Yeah, you've got one chance and one chance only, I think, with that.
We're out of quarantine by then, aren't we? But we'd have only been training for 2 hours or something like that. So that would be another sorry hole situation.
In the general scheme of things, again, a little bit like I was talking about earlier on, think of it a pre-season. Match away at Boston with no point available isn't a bad way to get back into ahead and rest.
And you've got more subs available in the trophy as well. You can pick seven. So
that's true. Still only use three, but you can pick seven. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely right. And I know last time we mentioned about Chesterfield FC women. Looking forward to them playing again. But of course, the latest lockdown means, because that's not classed as elite sport, they're having to hole up again, which is a real pity. Because I did read something that they'd tweeted that they played 11 league matches during 2020 and won all of them.
Yeah.
Which is takes some doing at any level, doesn't it, really? Mm-hmm. So let's just hope they can get back at a sooner rather than later. But you know, none of us have any idea on that at the moment. But we certainly all get the impression that even if Martin Smith does come, that won't necessarily be the end of it. Definitely it does look as though James Rowe's shaping up for next season with a squad that will be ready to go, whether that be at National League or League Two level. And I know some time ago, Paul, a couple of podcasts ago, probably when we were talking about the Who the Next Manager Will Be podcast, and we were talking about the guys at Lincoln, the Cowley brothers, James Rowe almost seems to be doing the sort of thing that they were doing in just shaking everything up and bringing a completely and utterly new identity to the team. And we know how successful they were at Lincoln.
Yeah, I mean, we Daryl touched on identity before. I think that identity is sort of been there with this club, that it's a big club at this level and it should be brought out a little bit more, you know, that we are, you know, attracting good players and we should do, you know, really. I think identity in terms of how we play is important as well. So that's maybe what he's trying to do. Also using the community as well. We've touched on this in previous podcasts as well, but you're right, Phil, when you mentioned before that he does get that, doesn't he? You know, yeah. There's a loyal fan base here that can be tapped into, that can go towards 10,000. We've seen that. So if you can tap into that and get winning football, because that's what brings fans back into the ground, and hopefully it'll happen next season where fans can come into the ground and hopefully, you know, they'll see good football, they'll see a side pressing, they'll see what they saw under Paul Cook, and it'll bring fans in. Winning football always does, and we can get up to 6,000 and 7,000 for National League. That would be amazing, you know, even if we're still in the National League, that is. But obviously we're going to go for it this year. But
and like I say, he got it. I think I might have mentioned last podcast that somebody who'd fallen out of love with a club had started sort of pricking their ears up again and asked me to deliver a bottle of wine on their behalf.
Yeah.
Barnet game, and I did that. And the guy who sent the wine contacted me a little bit after Christmas and sent me an image of a handwritten Christmas card that James Rowe had written to him. Yeah.
Oh, and it wasn't, okay.
Thanks for the wine, James. It was a proper letter within the card, you know, he could have just written, thanks for the wine, happy Christmas, you know, love to see you back at the club at some stage.
That's it. I mean, that's the kind of touch, Phil, that we're on about. It's Paul Cook picking a fan up on Chatsworth Road to take him to the ground at the bus stop. It's one of those little things, isn't it? You know, so.
Absolutely. And, he really, really, really does get it. And I think when people are able to, you know, see him up close and personal in a way that I've been lucky enough to be able to see so far, they'll move even a further notch up with him because they'll see it's not just about the football. I know you can see that on an interview and everything along those lines, but you know, there's a lot more to him than just being a bright spark in front of the microphone. You know. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got before we finish off, have we got anything that we want to add or that we've not talked about or think about, Stuart?
No, not for me. No. I think we've covered everything that we possibly can do, given the comparative lack of football since the last one, and the sort of enforced lack of it going forwards for the short term.
Of course, you've no doubt noted about Kwasi Asante after the interview he did, that we've got somebody else who's played in Europe, playing his couple of minutes for Birmingham City in the Europa League against some Portuguese team.
Well, indeed, and, you know, he has his Dutch football background as well, doesn't he? Growing up in that country. Yes.
Does anything for you to add?
I think the revolving door will keep revolving. Watch plays in the next however long.
A few hours, probably.
Yeah, while we're in supposed lockdown, I don't think Mr. Rowe will be locked down. Personally, I'd like to see a keeper. I would like to see a keeper because I think that's the biggest single Achilles heel we've still got. Now, whether he will go down that road at this stage, I don't know. But I personally would like to see a keeper. But if we can get through this latest COVID thing, get the team training again for a couple of days and at least play that trophy match before we play Wrexham, I think it'd be a good thing.
Yeah, Paul?
No, not. I don't think I've got any. But I think we went up to 57th, didn't we, in the podcast chart? In the iTunes podcast chart. 55th was it? The Heady Heights.
Yeah. Wow. We're like an orange drink now. Yeah. We're the Britvics of the podcast world.
I mean, people must be podcasted out that they're listening to ours, but it's
absolutely.
Lockdown must be affecting people.
You've to protect our integrity as a podcast, you've got to get this out to all the podcast places pretty quick, because we might have signed 9 new players if you delay.
You're giving me a deadline. Stop it.
there could be another new team and an under 23 set up. if you don't do it in the next 10 minutes. But the only thing I'd like to mention is I think we'll be back, and I know sort of Daz was a regular frustrated competitor. I think we're back with our Spirac lockdown quizzes before you know it. So looking forward to that. One set already, ready to roll.
You're the man that frustrated me, Phil. For those.
No, so one ready to roll when Nick's got all the bits and bobs ready. We'll be putting out when that's going to be, but hopefully not long after this podcast comes out, with a bit of luck. But it was a great community that we had going in the spring and summertime. Let's hope we can get that going again before people are allowed to go and watch the football. So thanks for listening all the way through again. So from me, Phil and Paul and Stuart and Daz, we'll do another one in a few weeks' time, and hopefully that 4-point gap might be even closer. Cheers.